I've been thinking a lot since Connie approached me kindly to speak at this event about what I could say about the two questions, the two queries. How do individuals become a community? What type of person am I going to be? I thought of ways in which these questions, so deep and epic and abstract and serious, could effectively be brought home if we linked them to languages of self-critique or what we might more colloquially call institutional in-jokes. So first my plan was going to be to demystify the whole idea of the SWAT bubble, exposing it as a myth of the privilege which it seeks to critique. My students have heard this rant many times. They have heard me say that Swarthmore is not a bubble, that it is a product of history, and in particular, the history of capitalism, that lots of people in lots of places near and far are doing a lot of work for Swarthmore to happen, and that the whole idea of the SWAT bubble is what is known as a humble brag, i.e. we are congratulating ourselves under the pretense of critiquing ourselves when we say that we are a bubble. But I soon realized that this sort of approach was limited, that not only was it a bit preachy, it failed to address the questions I'd been presented with about individuals becoming communities and people becoming the people they're going to become. My next line of thinking was a bit more sunny. I thought, how can we take our deepest institutional fears and turn them into positive philosophies of community and personhood? Take, for instance, the fear of entitlement, a word that is often used and which is, in many ways, a very interesting, slippery concept, because it might seem on the surface that entitlement is the same as another word, privilege, that we hear often, but the more that we think about it, it is actually quite different. Unlike privilege, which reflects status and inheritance, entitlement can strike anyone at any time. There is a kind of viral randomness to entitlement, which in some ways makes it more demonic and harder to deal with. I thought, how can we face this demon beyond accusing each other of being or acting entitled? So I got to thinking, what exactly is the opposite of entitlement? I was thinking that if entitlement is the right to have, then maybe its opposite is the right to give, another word for which is generosity. Or maybe its opposite is a refusal of the right to have. And I don't know if we have a word for that stance of refusal, perhaps self-divestiture, a long word that, you know, doesn't really roll off the tongue. But then I did start thinking a lot about credit and debt, and then in the course of a conversation with a friend, I knew what I needed to talk about today. My friend suggested that the opposite of entitlement was an anonymous generosity, a generosity that doesn't take credit for itself, a kind of giving without taking and without even identifying ourselves as givers. This then started a whole conversation about anonymity, and we went back and forth about how the idea of anonymity opens new questions about individuals becoming in communities and each of us deciding what kind of people we want to become. There is, on the one hand, so much to be said for anonymity. It protects the vulnerable. It facilitates honesty. It would be hard to make the case for non-anonymous course evaluations. It would be hard to make a case against Alcoholics Anonymous. The liberating powers of anonymity are proportional, in a way, to the hold of identity. When individuals become members of communities, they often do so in anonymous ways. In many ways, anonymity provides an easy passage from individual to community because it allows us to experiment with who we want to be. But anonymity also has a dark side, as contained, for instance, in the figure of the troll. I hadn't, until I was talking to my friend, connected the word troll to a phenomenon which had often fascinated me, the kind of person who leaves anonymous comments on blogs and posts, very often claiming to say what everyone is really thinking. We are, of course, familiar with this phenomenon at Swarthmore, and it occurred to me then that we can address these big and deep questions by thinking about the terrifying truthiness of the troll, the fear that the troll loves to propagate, that what she or he is saying is deeply felt by all members of the community, that they just aren't willing to say it out loud. So my question for the audience is, in the spirit, again, of turning questions into more questions, what can we learn from the phenomenon of the troll about how individuals become communities and how we become the people we want to become? I like the idea of the troll because it is at once utterly real and radically ambiguous. Even its etymology is fascinating. I wondered, how do we get from the goblin-like creatures who guard bridges to people who make racist or sexist slurs in internet forums? What exactly is the path from A to B? And so I did a little bit of research and found, amongst other things, in 1958, an article on JSTOR, which is something that a lot of you will become familiar with soon, by someone called Terence Wilbur. He published an article called Troll, an Etymological Note, which started with the line, "The troll as a monstrous, evilly disposed, man-like being is well known on Scandinavian soil. This deceitful being was closely associated with nefarious and magical practices. For besides the primary forms, we find trolldom, which includes witchcraft and sorcery, and trollery, which includes magic and enchantments." And then it went on to talk about other Germanic languages and all the other variations of troll: ghostly monster, witch, lout. So, you know, I suppose there's something ghostly about the internet troll, and that's one way in which, you know, the internet troll connects to the troll that we see in fantasy fiction. But the fantasy troll is not actually the only precursor of the internet troll. Another kind of etymology of the word troll comes from late 19th century male same-sex subculture in Victorian London, where the troll became a kind of a canting term, which was used to refer to bisexual men who were cruising at gay bars, and people couldn't tell if they were posing or passing or why. Often it was a slang or it was an insult used to refer to men who abused the anonymity of semi-secret urban spaces where queer men came together, who threatened other individuals who sought to join the communities, who prevented people from becoming the persons they might have wanted to become. So, you know, this was just a kind of a surface, you know, it's not like I did, you know, a detailed research into the different meanings of the word troll, but it became clear the more that I looked into it that it was messy and complex and fascinating and good to think with, something that can help us, you know, even though it's sort of funny and sort of scary, can help us really get at the questions that we're asking, these queries. I found that the concept of the troll becomes even more interesting when we think about how it is at once a noun and a verb, that it's fun and scary to think about how one person's troll is another person's truth teller, that a lot of people say terrible things that are overtly racist, sexist, transphobic, or homophobic under the cover of anonymity on internet blogs. And then there are people who use anonymity to fight those things. So, you know, who gets to decide who's the troll? Is it a community decision? If the troll is part of our community, then what does he or she tell us about it? Is it possible that the troll defines the community? Meaning, is the Swarthmore troll the opposite of the not Swarthmore troll, the troll at that imaginary institution that we often like to conjure, that far-off place whose values are exactly the opposite of our own? So I don't have answers to these questions, but I do think there's a lot to be learned from facing the ambiguity of the troll. I think it might even make us better persons, or at least help us figure out the kinds of people we want to be. So just 2 points to conclude. First of all, that trolls, broadly defined, are educational in that the words of the troll are a not-so-hidden archive of ideological violence, the sexism, racism, transphobia, homophobia that exists in our midst, that keeps the bubble always broken. It is often the troll who reveals, through her or his anonymity, some of the darkest sentiments that lurk under the surface of the institutional fabric. Now, I'm loath to believe the troll in her or his anonymity reveals the truth of what people really think. I refuse to surrender to the terrifying truthiness of the trolls, but the troll does tell us something about who we can be and what we must watch out for. I don't think the troll defines our community, but I think she or he does reveal its complexity, as does every instance of one person identifying another person as a troll. So I think an archive produced of the word troll is an archive of many things, including of what is not unthinkable, even within the SWAT bubble. And perhaps we can say that Swarthmore is defined by its trolls, not because they represent our views, because they represent what we fear, and that if trolls are by definition unidentifiable, the point about trolls is precisely that anyone can be one, that one person's troll is another person's provocateur. And in general, that by facing the moral ambiguity of the troll, we learn about the dangers of anonymity, but also about the powers of identity. For the troll reveals what individuals in our community are capable of thinking and saying when their identity and authority aren't at risk. So the word, this one word, troll, kind of spins out into all these abstractions, anonymity, identity, authority, community, and in a way, it's like a merry-go-round. It, you know, it helps us see them from different angles and disorients us in ways that are productive. I also think that the troll and anonymity more generally can help each of us understand the kind of people that we want to be. I think it's healthy to think about the inner troll, the troll within each of us, someone that most of the world doesn't see. Even if you don't say terrible things in internet forums, are there things that you would say under the cover of anonymity that you wouldn't say openly? What would those things say about you as a person and your relationship to your community? You might find that these things will change as you take new classes and have new experiences. I do think we can learn a lot about the kind of people we are, can be, should be, when we critically self-examine our natural immediate reactions to forms of anonymity which liberate us from accountability and responsibility, and at the same time, don't give us credit, moral or cultural capital, for what we say or what we do. I'm not saying that the anonymous me or the anonymous you is my inner troll, or that my true self comes out when I'm doing things anonymously, partly because I don't believe that there is a true self that's stable and unchanging. But I do think that my anonymous interactions make me what I am as much as my interactions with communities in which I am identifiable. So these are my thoughts on anonymity and trolls, such as they exist. They're constantly changing. In the last few days, getting around Philadelphia in crutches, I learned a lot about the kindness of strangers, of people who will remain permanently anonymous, opening doors and pulling strings to make things happen. The whole city has transformed around me as these kind strangers, these good trolls, have emerged from every corner. But crutches have also made me learn how much I've taken my anonymity for granted, that everyone who sees me in the city has a story forming in their head about what happened. And then I have the really terrifying thought, what if the people who open the doors have double lives as internet trolls? So I'm just going to leave you with this, that level of ambiguity, you know, the way in which a word like this can, you know, can help us see the multiple dimensions of, you know, two questions that might seem like they have obvious answers. I don't have any concrete advice other than to suggest that we think about how we can enjoy our anonymity without abusing it, that we watch ourselves if we find that it is becoming a vehicle, that our anonymity is becoming a vehicle for entitlement, that we face the inner troll and perform anonymous acts of kindness. I do believe that the work we do for no credit is often the work that turns individuals into communities, that secret acts of kindness to strangers help us imagine the kind of people we want to become and transform us into better people, people we didn't even imagine we could be, both in and out of the SWAT bubble.